I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi there, you're listening to Flop Culture. This is a podcast all about flops, good, bad, and the ones in between. I'm your host, Fionnuala J. I hope you're really well. Hope you enjoyed last week's episode on Talisa. Hashtag justice for Talisa. Big thank you again to Aaron Twitchen. He will 100% be back and appreciate all the feedback on it. Great episode, loved it. There's another absolute 10 out of 10 flop coming up, and I'm very excited to talk about it. But first, let's talk about the news. What's been happening this week? Former Disney star Bridget Mendler has launched an outer space communications startup, once again proving that child fame should not be a thing. We should not let children be famous, or we should let them be famous for a while, and then we should let them work in STEM, women in STEM, am I right? Bridget Mendler, right? Most people will probably know from a Disney Channel show called Good Luck Charlie. It ran from 2010 to 2014. I think she was also in Wizards of Waverly Place. Been in lots of original Disney Channel stuff. Lemonade Mouth is another one. It was a movie. None of these I have seen. I know Bridget Mendler from the studio album Hello, My Name Is, which came out in 2012 and has a song that goes viral once every 6 months on TikTok. And it's called Hurricane. And it's one of the best songs ever because she does like a fake British accent intro that makes absolutely, it just makes absolutely no sense. It's so bonkers, it works. And then it is this absolute slapper of a chorus. Oh, I love it so much. I'm actually going to listen to it immediately after I finish this podcast. But anyway, she hasn't released music since 2017 because she's been busy doing shit with space. You know what I mean? So now she's founded this company based in Los Angeles. It's called Northwood Space. I think she's doing it alongside her husband, Griffin Cleverly, and an engineer, Shariah Luthra. And they made the announcement on Twitter, X, formerly known as Twitter, whatever. They're after receiving $6.3 million in funding. They said, we have our sights on building a data highway between Earth and space. We are designing shared ground infrastructure from first principles to expand access to space. We've a lot of work ahead of us, but that's the fun part. Brilliant. Her commitment to not releasing music, she needs to be studied. You know what I mean? Like, she's outlapping Rihanna Normani at this point because she's like, I will do anything by release music. I want to build a data highway to space. That's what I want to be doing. I don't want to be releasing music. And the organization's mission is to build a data highway between Earth and space to meet the needs of today's space industry. The one-lane rickety road for space data needs to adapt to a 10-lane highway routing continuous traffic across the globe. I host a podcast, so I'm not smart enough to understand what any of that means. She's very smart. She graduated from the University of Southern California in 2016, received a master's and doctorate of philosophy from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in 2020 and 2024, and a doctorate of law from Harvard Law School in 2024. This woman is a genius. And do you know what? Fair play to her. She could be releasing bops, but she said, you know, I'm going to use this big bop brain of mine and I'm going to do something about space. I'm going to make sure I can send texts to space. Brilliant. Good for her. Bridget, if you ever want to come on the podcast, I'm here. I'm definitely going to do a podcast episode on her. This news story this week just put her back in my brain. I love her. Anyway, from one pop star to another, shall we get into this week's flop? I'm so excited. Let's go back to the mid-noughties, shall we? The reality TV boom, it's just beginning, and all we wanted was to be able to peek into our favourite celebrities' lives. Enter Totally Scott Lee, a show that promised a behind-the-scenes look into the life of step singer Lisa Scott Lee and her husband, Johnny Shental. However, the premise of the show quickly changed becoming an experiment that would define what it truly means to flop in every sense of the word, forever encapsulated by an MTV film crew. Joining me to discuss reality TV one-hit wonder, Totally Scott Lee, is co-host of the Unveiled podcast, Nessa Morrissey. Enjoy. Nessa Morrissey, you are so welcome to Flop Culture. How are you doing?
Great. It's great to be welcomed in my own home. I really appreciate it.
This is the first one that I've done on the road. Oh, this is the first one where the guest has been like, come to my house, which is very nice.
We're
thank you for
tour,
that.
Baby. You're so welcome.
We're on tour, baby. Appreciate it. Talk to me about the flop that you've picked. I'm so excited.
Okay, it's very niche. That's okay. And I do feel like my whole stars have aligned for being asked to come on this podcast, because I will talk about this show rent-free to anybody who listens anyway, which is kind of a weird thing to bring up. So I'm glad that we have a whole thing dedicated to it. So it is Totally Scott Lee, which was a show on MTV in 2005, I think it was, about Lisa Scott Lee, formerly of Steps. She's going on a revival, I don't know if you want to say tour. She's on a revival journey to try and go solo, okay? And she basically has her first single that she's kind of doing on her own on the cusp of the show coming on board. I think it gets to like 23.
23, yeah. Which, the iconic moment.
Sorry. It's like, she'd be doing well.
I was going to say, like, it's very interesting. The whole show kind of charts her essentially flopping, which is hysterical given the concept of this podcast.
Perfect.
But like, it's funny now because there are so many pop stars now who kind of can get away with actually not really charting at all, and they're still considered successful. So I'm like, was she just too ahead of her time? I don't know.
A trailblazer
in some ways, perhaps. Did you watch this when it came out, or was it like a later watch for you?
No, okay. It was. I don't know if I'm ashamed or proud to say that this is my third time watching this.
No, that's pride. Okay. Third time lucky, that's pride.
No, I remember watching it in real time, and it was like in, like we were kind of talking about this before the podcast, it was like in that era or time where like shows were just ruthless. Like reality TV was so mean. Like they destroyed the people who it was about. Like today you would never get a fraction of what was aired on that to make it to actual TV. So it was like perfect for a viewer, but like having gone back and watched it as an adult, like it's uncomfortable, especially like as a woman as well, because there's some parts of it that are like, I don't know if it's like on the cusp of problematic, but like it's not great.
No, I would agree, because I think the start of it is like, it's absolutely hilarious. Yes. And then as you're watching her kind of unravel towards the end, it is a bit like, ugh. You are kind of like, ugh. Oh, maybe I actually do kind of feel slightly sorry for you.
Yeah, there's two elements, because like, she's a melt. Like, she is. You're like, oh, Lisa.
Very diva behaviour, because obviously she's coming off the huge success of Steps. Were you Steps girly?
No, like, fair play. No, it worked for me.
The most polite way of saying no ever.
Like, this kitten baby was a moment.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. No, that's absolutely fair. But she's coming off the massive success of that, and there's this anticipation that there is going to be, like, a solo career. So the show is kind of following her a year into the effort.
Yeah.
She initially is doing... So I think even before she started releasing solo music, she's initially managing her three younger brothers, including Andy Scott Lee, who's also featured in the show. Yeah, because he's in a group of their own called 3SL.
I couldn't remember if it was that or 3LW, but that was... I'm getting a little tired of little promises.
Anyway, move on. Too many bands with letters and numbers. They obviously don't really do much. So she does release a debut single. This is 2003, and it's Lately, which she co-wrote. That does reasonably well. It goes to number 6. She's another song then, Too Far Gone, which goes in at number 11. She ends up parting ways with her label at the time, which is Mercury. So she's like, okay, what am I going to do? She's an album recorded at this point called Unleashed, which is cancelled, even though like promotional samplers had been sent out already. So then she's like, okay, what do I do? She ends up self-funding this project with Intenso Project, this song called Get It On, and they self-fund the video and stuff, and that's where we meet them at the start of the first episode, because it's like, okay, she has this song, she's getting out there, she's like a sexy girl, like how is the track gonna do, whatever, because she, Lisa, throughout this whole thing also wants you to know that she's working very hard. She's a very hard working girly. She's a hard working pop star.
Oh my god, would she stop? We get it. we'll delve into that.
Yeah. So it opens, and it's that iconic first episode where it's like she's talking to her manager, who is Nathan Moore, who's also kind of a failed pop star, and it's
that man.
Beyond, we'll get into it. Yeah. But it opens, and okay, the song goes to 23. She's devastated. Yeah. She's like, we were B-listed on Capital. Like, the song should have gone to number one. And I get it, because obviously they've self-funded the video or whatever.
Yeah.
MTV are filming all this. MTV have the idea to be like, well, we're filming this as it is anyway. So, like, let's take this as a challenge.
Yeah.
Your next song that you do has to break the top 10 or you give up your pop career. So the show is essentially charting the work she's putting into getting the song and the work she's doing to promote the song. And there's this live show at the end to see whether she ends up making it in the chart. Like, saying it out loud, it would, as you said, it would literally never happen today.
No, and like, it's cruel, but like, it's gorgeous to watch. You know what I mean? It's, I feel like, oh God, but, you know, yeah, it's the end by the end part as well. But like you were saying, the figures weren't like train wreck. Like, I know Intenso, I think it was 23, and your man Nathan, the manager, who we'll talk about, he was like, you know, Lisa, like, it's a car crash. And she's like, what? I wouldn't say car crash, Nathan. Like, it's like an iconic clip that's like on TikTok and everything, but like, it's not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, because it's very interesting, because it's not really like, there aren't a lot of talking heads. It's very much like following them. So you're seeing every angle of it. And you're also seeing, because I don't think you see this with pop stars these days, you don't kind of see them showing their work when they all obviously want to be like number one and they all want to do well. But it seemed like at this time it was like, oh no, you don't admit that you want to do well. You don't admit that, like, not getting into the top 20 is a failure. Whereas you're seeing Lisa be like, this is shit. And, like, she's openly saying this in radio interviews and promotion interviews and stuff like that. I know, obviously, it's tied into the show as well. It's the whole premise. But she's actually being like, yeah, no, if we don't get to top 10, I'm going to be devastated. Like, I put in so much work into this music for my fans. If I'm not getting the same response back from my fans, like, that's a bit shit. Like, it's so... It's so candid and it's so funny, and I'm like, I don't know if you're hearing yourself, like, what you're saying.
There's an element, this is again where I'm like, sometimes I'm like, yeah, maybe shy, and then there's a real element of like expectancy there as well from her, I think. Just because you're putting the work in, like, it doesn't mean you're going to get. Now, in fairness to her, like, I don't think she was set up for success. Her manager is Kooky Dooky.
Yeah. He is, Nathan. And he had been in a boy band called Brother Beyond as their lead singer.
Lets us know every 3 to 4 seconds.
Which I will say, that's the editors, and it's fucking hilarious, because Nathan's like, because when I was in a band, and then it cuts and it's like just him in the music video, like, like typical 90s, 80s. He went on, as you said, like, he's managing Lisa Scott Lee, but he went on and represented a number of other pop idol contestants and stuff. Like, he didn't have a huge amount of success, but like, he's trying to manage Lisa. He's then also trying to manage her brother, Andy Scott Lee, who again, we've already mentioned, kind of another failed boy band, pop idol person. He's managing the two of them. He himself is still kind of performing in Butlins and like.
Pontins. Like, he booked Lisa for Mardi Gras in Cardiff.
But the home of Mardi Gras. Yeah, somebody laughing at
the soul of Mardi Gras. But he also booked himself on Mardi Gras, and it's kind of like, surely there's a conflict of interest here. And like, you kind of see that unravel as well. So sorry about
that. That's okay. She's a busy girl, girls. She's booked and busy.
I was like, Mom, text me during this. So you kind of see then, they kind of push the funnel down further and further of trying to amalgamate Andy, the brother, and Lisa together. And as Fernil said, he's managing the both of them. And he starts to, like, make them try and launch their single on the same day. They end up getting signed to the same record label. They share a video set, essentially. It was, like, timeshare, which she did the morning, and they did a quick fucking clean-up, and then he was on, you know? So, yeah, like, she was never... Considering all of that, I think the success she had with the song was pretty okay. And the song wasn't bad.
The song isn't bad, right? So the song is called Electric, and that's another kind of arc in the series as well, where it's like, she wants to... Electric is very pop, electro-pop, again, kind of in the realm of, like, I'm a sexy girl, sexy girl. Yeah. And then the other track she recorded was Now or Never, which was way more like... contemporary adult, like, guitar, rock, raw, authentic me. Guy Chambers wrote Electric, and he also wrote a load of Brian McFadden songs.
And Spice Girls.
And Spice Girls, yeah, and Robbie Williams.
Yeah, they should have went that route.
Yeah. Yeah, but a good song.
It was kind of like a shit version of Padam, but like that's okay. I was kind of like, I like this song. Like, I'm okay with this.
It's just so funny again to watch the tension between her and the record label team. So she, at this point, she was signed to, as you mentioned, the same label as Andy Scott Lee. It was Concept Records. It was a much smaller record label. Again, prior to this, you're seeing Nathan go around. Like, he has this flip chart with all the labels written on it, and it's just like no written next to all of them. And it's, he's going back to say that to Lisa, and Lisa's like, but they can't all say no. They eventually get the deal with Concept.
Yeah.
And it, they, again, you can see the struggle in Concept's offices, because like they've obviously signed on because it's like, okay, we've an MTV TV show backing this and whatever, and like Lisa's kind of had a track record of like having songs, so like surely how hard can it be? But there's one woman in there,
Roseanne,
and is like, is not about her from the get go.
And hides it so well.
Hides it so well in front of all of the MTV cameras.
I know, but like, I again, like, she's like, sorry, it doesn't work like that, which I understand though, because like, I do think Lisa was trying to dictate their decisions. But then, again, stuff you would never see today was like the record label exec, I think his name is Max.
Mm. Max Bloom.
The other exec label being like, I mean, who even buys Lisa Scott Lee records? And it was like, you signed her.
It's beyond. And even that whole conversation around when they're like, when Lisa's going back being like, I think we should do Now or Never, and they're pushing Electric, and they like, the two of them are, they're essentially hanging up on Lisa and being like, what the fuck is she on about? And Roseanne is essentially like, she doesn't know best, like the artists don't always know best. Getting that insight was just so interesting. But then like mashed into the show, while you're following her solo career and these endeavours, you're getting insects of like Lisa Scott Lee and her life with her husband, who, I'm going to be honest, I cannot believe she's still married to, but like, fair play, happy for them.
He's an absolute dope.
Do you?
Oh my God, I thought he was such a good husband.
No. I don't know. And Andy.
No, Johnny.
Johnny? Oh no, sorry, Andy's brother. Fuck's sake. Oh my God, Johnny, yes.
This is my special subject.
Johnny was a member Hearsay as well. So again, sorry, we haven't mentioned, the theme song for the show is essentially like, take the piss out of all about the fact that they're all essentially has-beens. Because I think initially they were positioning the show as like kind of the UK's answer to Newlyweds, and it was going to follow Lisa and Johnny because they had obviously just gotten married. But then also you've like Andy shoved in. Andy's going out with Chanel Heaton, who's in Liberty X at the time.
Which we have to get into. Like, it's like the pop culture crossovers just keep on going and going and going. And it's like, there's like, for me, there was like two shows essentially.
Mm.
It was like the Lisa Scott Lee career element, but I also was bet into the Andy and Michelle Keaton like element as well.
Mm.
You can definitely tell the family don't love Michelle.
Yeah,
like, it's not exactly hidden, and I thought it was so interesting because it was like so the time and culture of like the whole celebrity, like, you know, when celebrity was like a real thing, like Paps and like
tabloid, like real tabloid culture.
It was like obviously before times of social media, and that was like their currency. So he like was gonna propose to Michelle and didn't tell any of his family because he was like, you know, obviously I don't want to mess up the tell-all with okay. And it was like, he was just being so transparent about it. Like, he wasn't even trying to like play it down. It was if like, oh, that's not the reason we're doing this or whatever, you know. And then like Lisa and the husband then are like kind of giving it shit about them, but they basically got engaged. And like Lisa's husband Johnny's like, I mean, like, does he even want to get engaged to her? He's just doing it to make her happy. And she's like, yeah, well, I'd want to keep her happy. I was like, this is gold.
It's how they set them up as rivals as well. It's just so mean because again, obviously Michelle is like riding high at this point with Liberty X.
Yeah.
Again, they are kind of in a similar, they'd just released a song at that time and then ended up going number four. And this is in tandem with Lisa's having a banger with Electric, trying to go, going around all of Cardiff to every radio station being like, will you please ring up every member of Steps, which she genuinely does. And it's like, can you please buy a copy?
She'll buy it probably.
It's just, it's absolutely beyond. I loved when it was Michelle's birthday, and again, like Lisa turns up with her three friends, absolutely pissed. You're getting this all on camera. They pretend, in inverted commas, to forget the present for Michelle.
Yeah.
Like, they're falling around the streets laughing that Lisa hasn't eaten properly that day, so that's why she's so fucked, and they're calling her Lisa Sconley because that's all she's eaten.
That was a belter.
I can't, like, it's just to get that insight, because it's like the things you'd be doing with your own friends on the night out where you're like, this is hilarious, but it's like MTV are capturing the whole thing and are watching it, and we're going to eviscerate you for it.
I know, one of my other favourite like lol moments was when she goes to see a celebrity psychic. I can't remember his name, but he gave Jackie Stallone energy.
Oh, majorly.
He was like, you're going to be a star. Because, like, the people want Liza. And she's like, it's Lisa. And he's like, you need to be sexy. He's like, the denim jacket. She's like, no sexy. No.
No sexy. No.
He's like,
no.
Look at this man. I love him.
How does it finish up then? We're across 8 episodes. Yeah. And as I said, we're kind of following all of their lives and her desperately, like, on a mission to get back into the charts again. Yeah. How does the series kind of conclude?
Yeah, she kind of essentially walks further and further off the plank, you know, and then number 8 is essentially we're watching her writing her to drop.
Yeah.
You know, and it's cruel, okay, because they have her basically on MTV live, right?
Yeah, so that, like, is it the 7th episode is live, or a bit of it is live, and it's introed by Emma Willis and an irrelevant male TV presenter, sorry, Dunker, whatever. Same. Happy for you, Dunker. Okay. And they're kind of like, okay, so you're going to find out the results now after this with us, and we've kept you in a room all day, blah, blah, blah. And then the non-live portion is them kind of tracking the last few hours and the last kind of ditch efforts.
Yeah.
So then you come back from the break and it's Emma Willis being like, so we've kept you here. Like, how are you feeling? Are you going to quit the music industry? Whatever, if this comes out and shoot. And, like, we haven't seen what's gone on behind the scenes yet, but, like, Lisa actually already knows the chart position. And it's kind of, it's like a horror movie, how it unfolds.
I can't stop watching.
So Emma reveals the news that Electric has gone in at number 13.
Yeah.
And Lisa's like, still all right. Still all right.
Her eyes are dead.
Everyone's kind of, like, applauding in the background because all the full cast is there, like Michelle Heaton, Andy, okay, Nathan. It's just her family is there. This confetti drops from the ceiling. It's one of the most miserable things I've ever seen in my entire life. And then to see what actually is going on behind the scenes, like, before they go to air, that's a bit where I was like, oh, actually, maybe I do feel a bit sorry for, you know, even though you were acting like a massive diva.
I do feel like it was like a public lynching a little bit of her, you know what I mean? Like, and Emma Willis opens the intro of the show being like, you are such a brave woman. Like, if somebody was opening with me waiting to find out what chart position I was, I'd be like, yeah, I'm off.
Yeah.
Because, like, brave is not good sometimes, you know what I mean? But basically, as you were saying, Fionnuala, like, they kind of knew the chart position, and the standoff that you alluded to behind the air off stage was basically, finally, somebody in her family was like, this is enough, like, you're just taking the absolute fucking piss every year at this point, because they wanted Lisa to stand there live on TV while they listed off the top 10 people, which obviously weren't her.
I shouldn't laugh, but, like, it's just insane to even think that anyone was like, it's nuts.
Bring it back.
Honestly.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I love it. I think, like, the insight you get into their family, like, we meet her nan, and you get interviews with her nan, and her nan's trying to support her career, and her nan is some absolute fucking cracking one-liners.
I can't, like, she was like, on the first one, Lisa brings all the shit out, like, I don't know, like, her magazine cutouts and everything, and she's like to the camera and he's like, yeah, we hang it up because she likes us to think we take an interest. But, like, she's so not the nanny now, Lisa. She craves praise of everything. Like, at one point they were talking about Andy's relationship and whether he's gonna get engaged. She stopped the whole conversation to make everybody praise the flowers she's put in a vase. She's like,
sorry, I'm dead into flowering.
She's like, oh, I like flowering. I'm like, no, honey, you put flowers in a vase. I don't even think you cut the stalks, you know? And then I don't know if you saw the clip where there's a daddy long legs in the kitchen and the dad is, like, pirouetting around the place trying to kill it. Picks up a newspaper and she's like, no, dad, that's me on it. And she's like, for God's sake, I look nice in that. And it's just like, you are, like, an egomaniac.
It's beyond. Like, it's funny when you read the Wikipedia page of the show where it says that Lisa and the other cast members had no creative control over the series, and Lisa Scott Lee was unhappy with some of the promotional material, notably the subtitle Desperately Seeking Fame, which, like, it is a bit rude, but it kind of is. Like, it's the entire consensus of the show. And I know there's an argument, you kind of see her at the end where she's like really struggling with the fact that she has agreed to, you know, I'm going to give up my music career if it doesn't break the top 10. And she's like, I'm really annoyed now because you can see her like performing in like clubs, whatever, and there's about 14 people there and she's like living for it. But then she gets off stage and is like, fuck, like I give up all of this if the song doesn't chart. And I think at that point she's also realised it's probably not going to. Like, and from that perspective, I'm like, probably a bit shitty of the TV show, but again at the same time it's like it's such a good concept, like, and at this point it was kind of make or break, so like why not have that over our heads to be like,
I know it's so offensive though for somebody to be like, right, okay, if this doesn't do so, you have to give up,
you have to give
you have to stop and leave us alone. But I do feel for me Michelle Keegan is like the undercurrent icon in it. Like, she's so gas. Like, at one point, Andy finally gets a record deal, God love him. And him, Michelle, and Nathan, the communal manager essentially for the Scotleys, go for drinks and they like pop champagne. And Michelle's like, oh, I'm welling up. And she's like, not well enough because Andy got a record deal. She's like, I'm welling up because it's Dom Perignon. This is perfection.
It's when at one point they're shopping as well, and woman comes up to Michelle Keaton thinking she's Victoria Beckham, but keep repeatedly mispronounces Victoria Beckham and so keeps saying Victoria Beckenham,
and she's seething.
And Michelle's
about
like, Michelle's furious. She's so like, mad. Same hair extensions, but so like mad. Is absolutely rotted.
But I do love, like, it's like a cultural study watching things like this. About, I'm obsessed with like the fashion. It's like,
I was just about to say, because even to go back to Michelle's birthday, like, Lisa turns up in this, it's white halter neck top, this short green sequin
skirt.
Like
dancing on ice.
It was like, but it was like she's going in for Paddy's Day or something. It was just,
it was massacre.
And it was the same for her own birthday. She wears this, like, but like tube top kind of dress, and it's like adds a sequin belt to it. It's just, it is such a product of its time. I love, like, it's such a time capsule.
Exactly.
I love it.
Yeah, or like her going like on the route to promote her single, like she goes to the opening of a Goldsmiths, which is like basically less than Fields, which Fields is fab, but like, you know,
shout out Fields,
sponsor the part of your Fields, but like it's just a really random thing in like a shopping centre, and they're like, so like, why are you here today, Lisa? And she's like, well, like, you know, I was asked, so okay.
Again, but it's that candidness and absolute lack of media training that it's like, what, you do not say that. Like,
we all assume that, but like, don't say it. But I just was in awe of the clothes. Like, there's Von Dutch moving around. There's like the Y2K sunglasses. There's a few gypsy skirts in the mix. A lot of cross chains on the men.
Mm.
It's so, like, authentic to the time.
Yeah.
And it's just, I love it.
You just reminded me of that scene when she is going to that jeweler's and they're in the shopping centre and they can't find the shop. So she goes up to those machines where you search and it tells you where it is. And she's like, afterwards, she's in awe at this technology. Yeah. She's like, that's dead, Andy, that. I can't believe that. That machine.
It's so good at impression. She's like, God love her.
I'm kind of obsessed. Like, could anything have prevented her career from flopping, or was it written in the stars? Like, do you think without the TV show, could it have been a success? Was the TV, did the TV show contribute? What do you think?
Oh my God, Nathan is the flop.
True.
If he spent less time in Pontins, but like, considering like the 13 was like pretty good, and essentially they had 2 weeks to project, to get a song, to get a record deal. So like, that's ridiculous. They didn't have any sort of like a proper media campaign. I know they had the MTV show, but like people weren't really hearing the song. So
yeah.
I think considering what she pulled off, despite the drawbacks she had and like the people in her corner, because they weren't rooting for her at all. It was like they wanted to see her fall nearly.
Like, you have a clip of Nathan turning to Andy Scottley and like saying that he thinks Lisa is difficult, which, like, don't get me wrong, from the show it seemed like she was, but you're saying that to one, her brother, to like a fellow client. It's just, in some ways I don't think any of them are like rooting against her, bar maybe Roseanne, but like it's really hard to watch, or Roseanne I should say, but it's really hard to watch that team and just be like, you were the only one steering this. But even in some ways it felt like she wasn't either. It just really felt like there was no clear identity as to who she was beyond steps. And I think she struggled with that, but also was like, I don't know how to do anything about it, so we're just going to fling shit at a wall and see.
They were all just in a flap. the whole time. But another thing that I did love, just to go back to like the era of like tabloids and all that, is when they staged a paparazzi shoot. Do you remember this? So it's like,
yes, with Now Magazine.
Now Magazine, and it's like the caption is like caught on camera, and they're like reading a magazine in the park, talking, and more bizarrely playing cricket. Which I was like, what in the world?
They go on so many bizarre hobbies in the show. At one point, Michelle and Andy are just like playing golf. I was like, what? And having an argument over the fact of whether they're going to get engaged. And Andy's like, can you hold the flag for me? Like,
I need a tea.
Yeah. I need a tea because she's absolutely laying into the grass.
Hockey and fucking golf. I was going to say golf pitch, whatever it's called.
This is not a sports podcast. This is pop culture podcast. Yeah, we mentioned Nathan. Nathan definitely had other motivations because he's been flouted on the reality TV shows since. He did, I think this is before Totally Scott Lee, but he did a musical revival program called Hit Me Baby One More Time. After Totally Scott Lee, he appeared on an E4 TV program called Boys Will Be Girls. I don't know if you remember this.
No.
This is so unhinged. So it was basically on Boys Will Be Girls, they made like a boy band, and the goal was, they put together a band of former boy band members, but they had to try and pass themselves off as a girl band. They were called the Honey Traps, slightly problematic. So they started by auditioning male singers who'd all been in bands before, and I think he was one of the coaches. To be managed by Olivier Bazzadi and Nathan Moore, ex-lead singer of Brother Beyond. It was only once the final four had been selected that the twist was revealed. They were given the task of trying to pass themselves off as a girl band. One of the four, Martin Humes of JLS, backed out at this point and was not replaced.
Oh, stop.
Unhinged.
Martin.
Unhinged. He didn't end up doing it, but it was like three other lads who I don't remember.
How did that man keep getting jobs?
Truly.
Do you know when you like, you look at your career and you're like, why the fuck do I have imposter syndrome?
I was just about to say, I was like, girls, if you're feeling bad about your job, or like, I don't know whether to apply for this, just watch Totally Scott Lee and watch Channel Nathan. Absolutely. 2006 then, he issued a statement via his website announcing that he had stopped managing acts, RIP to that, and he's continuing to tour as a solo artist, occasionally with Brother Beyond. I think they were reformed at some point in the noughties as well. He was on The Voice in 2015, did not make it to the second round.
He needs to pack it in, honey.
Yeah, yeah. Not like, good.
Like, I'm not... Well, I am. I'm shitting on it. But Pontins, if Pontins is calling, you may, you know, retrain.
That's the field sponsorship gone. That's the Pontins sponsorship gone. Thanks, Ness. Appreciate it.
Your brand.
Could you ever see them coming back to do something again?
Lisa Scott Lee?
Yeah.
So
I'd love a whole gang. I'd love like a little small reunion. I wouldn't need a full series program following them, but I'd love,
yeah, like what Geordie Shore did, you know, where they rewatched the show.
Yeah.
And comment.
Yeah.
I think they should, because I've got questions, you know. But I know I was looking it up like actually a couple of months ago, because I'm an absolute weirdo. I'm not
fair,
even
researching. Yeah, absolutely, for this, yeah,
podcast. But they are in Dubai now, and she's a teacher.
Yeah.
Like,
facilitator education, love that.
Well, because she kind of gives school teacher energy a little bit.
She does, in fairness, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, good on her.
Did you know her and Johnny were on a series of Celeb Air on ITV2? This is my fave ever.
Post show,
yeah. So this was 2008. They were both sacked in a double elimination as they abandoned their duties as cabin crew to go clubbing in Ibiza. They went to Eden for 2 hours.
Fuck off. She's
like,
just gone up in my
estimate. I swear to God, if you read any of their like Wikipedia pages, it's just the best thing ever. The two of them did Weakest Link Celebrity Couple Special. They were voted off fourth. Brilliant. Brilliant.
I did love as well when it was their anniversary and they get dressed up in like, it reminded me of like a Katie Price and Peter Andre's wedding, you know, just like bouffant everywhere. But it was like white, and it was to go and have dinner in the conservatory.
When she's coming downstairs in the wedding dress, I was so confused. I was like, are they not already married? Have I skipped an episode?
I did the exact same thing. I was like, oh shit. And then I was like, oh no. And then he puts a garter on in the conservatory. And she's like, I just want to have a love affair with the public. I was like, what in the world? I need to get off my phone. I was like, I need to focus on this more. It's so bizarre.
Is there any other like celebrity or like musical kind of family that you'd love to get the Totally Scott Lee treatment? But it would be this kind of open, and it wouldn't be controlled or produced. You know, okay. The way all the music documentaries now are so controlled or produced. Like, it would be as fly on the wall, as invasive, probably as mean as Totally Scott Lee. Who would you love to see get that treatment?
I will not rest until I find out what happened in the elevator with Solange and Beyonce.
So fair.
I will not rest.
So fair.
And I think it's going to be Blue Ivy who's going to tell us.
Yeah.
So that is one I would love to see, because I just say Beyonce is an absolute bollocks, and I just would love to see I just love to see it all.
Just get into
Just give
into
me the
insight.
Give me the piece. Let me just deconstruct it in my mind and kind of piece it all together.
Yeah.
What would yours be?
God, probably Beyonce, or I know they've kind of already done it, but like to do it modern day, like I'd love to see Jessica and Ashley Simpson, but like gearing up for their own comebacks and kind of charting that. You know what I mean?
Ashley Simpson never revived from the mime.
No.
I just think people didn't like her.
Yeah.
Do you remember then she was on Punk'd? Do you remember that episode?
No, I don't think so.
So she was on Punk'd just after that scandal happened, and she basically broke something in a shop. But she's gone on camera being like to her friend, "You have to take the fall for me here. This cannot be me." And it was just like, oh yeah, no, you're definitely not coming back.
I really wish she'd do Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, because she hangs out with some of them, but she won't. She's too private.
Hey, Ashley.
Ashley, yeah.
Did you ever read Jessica Simpson's autobiography?
I've listened to a podcast about it. Does that count?
You probably get the synopsis. It's incredible.
Yeah.
I didn't know she was so rich.
Yeah.
Mad.
She's one of kind of the first, like the best celebrity who kind of capitalised off the coming up with brands and like being an influencer, you know?
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with them.
Yeah,
obsessed.
And it really solidifies how much of a weirdo John Mayer is.
Yeah, yeah.
Would
not great.
Listening to that, folks.
Not a great fella.
No.
It's been such a pleasure. We've kind of given away the whole thing, but even it, like that's kind of the point of the podcast, but also I'd love you to, for anyone who hasn't watched and is maybe coming to this podcast first, why should they watch Totally Scotland?
Oh my God, it's such a journey, okay? It's so ruthless, it's so real. And you're kind of invested as well to see how it goes. I mean, obviously, spoiler alert, we've kind of revealed the charge, but it's more the journey of it and just the pop culture crossover for me. It's just, to me, it's like the perfect British reality TV show. So
yeah.
You're going to have to. And I don't know where you watched it, but I watched it on YouTube.
It's all on YouTube. Thank God for that person. Ganak 13 or whatever your name is. That's public service broadcasting. I'm so grateful for you. Yeah, look, she kind of flopped on the show, but I will say she did end up kind of getting the last laugh. She had her first full-length solo album, Now or Never. Never or Now, sorry, the original title of the second song. And it was released in South Africa first. March 26th of that, 2007.
Lady.
International Queen. Also love that, how it documents out. It's like, oh, you flopped in the UK, but maybe we'll try other territories.
Yeah,
never happens.
Ready for
no,
UK.
They weren't. She was ahead of her time. She was ahead of her time. Been a pleasure. Where can people hear more from you, Nessa, if they want to?
Oh, yes. So you can catch me as co-host of Unveiled. So we are coming out with episodes every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts, and would love you to tune in.
It's a great podcast. I've been on before. I'm not just saying that because I've been on before, but it's a great podcast.
You have. You came up with the best line of all time where you describe somebody as the human equivalent of a carvery. Poetic justice.
Poetic justice, truly. Nessa, always a pleasure. You are always welcome back. But for now, thank you so much for being on Flop Culture.
Thank you, my love. Goodbye.
Woo. Thank you to Nessa. I'm going to leave all of her links in the show notes. And as I mentioned, she co-hosts the podcast Unveiled with Niamh Cullen, which you can get on Go Loud or wherever you get podcasts. Totally Scott Lee is available to watch in full on YouTube. It's one of the best reality shows I've ever seen. And it pains me that we'll never, ever, ever see the likes of it. Obviously, I think some aspects of it wouldn't happen today, and rightfully so. And then there are some aspects of it, the lack of control, I mean, you just don't get it anymore. And it makes me sad. So brilliant. Just so many scenes. Finally, top of flops this week. Let's discuss, shall we?
You're a flop.
It was the BAFTAs this week. British film. I don't think it was the TV part of it yet. So it was the Film Awards, hosted by David Tennant. All the usual suspects winning. Yup, Cillian Murphy for Cork, winning for Oppenheimer, Best Actor. He's definitely going to win the Oscar. I'm very excited for him. I'm very excited for Cork. And, you know, with the ceremonies, you have your usual red carpets. Obviously, actors being interviewed. Andrew Scott was there. Obviously, missed out on a nomination for All of Us Strangers. But he was there. Paul Mescal nominated. Paul Mescal was there. They were all there, celebrating each other, having a laugh, whatever. Andrew Scott, at one point, is interviewed by a BBC reporter. I actually think he's their arts and entertainment correspondent, Colin Patterson. And Colin does his job, gets him and is like, "How are ya?" And starts to ask him about fellow Irish actor Barry Keoghan, who was nominated at the BAFTAs for Saltburn. We talked about Saltburn on the Patreon. If you want to go listen to that, it's patreon.com/flapculture. The film is about to be spoiled if you haven't listened, so just to bear that in mind. And the correspondent
starts to, as I mentioned, asks Andrew Scott if he knows Barry Keoghan, and asks about his reaction to seeing Barry Keoghan's naked dance scene in Saltburn. For anyone, again, who's not familiar, the end of the film ends with Barry Keoghan dancing and helicoptering his genitalia around, essentially, right? Let's put it politely, right? And that's why Sophie Alex Baxter's song is going viral, because it soundtracks that moment. Anyway, he asks about it, and Andrew Scott is saying, I won't spoil it for anybody. And Patterson is kind of pressing him, even though it's very clear then that Andrew doesn't really want to talk about it. And Patterson's like, I mean, you've spoiled it away. And Andrew's like, no, no, all good. Patterson, seemingly being unable to read a room or a person, I can't fathom it. But anyway, he continues and he's like, there was a lot of talk about prosthetics. How well do you know him? And kind of asking about prosthetics in general, because again, to say again, Barry Keoghan did not use the prosthetic. So what you're seeing on screen is Barry Keoghan's. He's asking Andrew Scott this, right? Andrew Scott shakes his head, leaves the conversation. Patterson finishes by saying, too much, which I believe was in jest. But this is a film that Andrew Scott is not in. It's a film that he's not there to promote. I think it's actually more significant that Andrew Scott is there to promote All of Us Strangers, a film in which he leads and is very, very, very strong in, a film that is about a gay relationship that we're only just starting to see these kind of stories play out on screen, right? An unbelievably frustrating situation, and I just cannot fathom Patterson's thought process. And there's a lot of discussions around the fact that, like, I'd wonder if he, and maybe, and I'm open to correction on this, maybe he did have time with Paul Mescal, maybe asked him the same thing. As far as I'm aware, I don't think so, because we're not seeing these kind of same viral moments coming out of that interview, if that's the case. Why? And I get it, they're two Irish actors, they definitely know each other, the Irish industry is famously very supportive, and especially these three men at this particular time, all having this kind of surge in their careers, they're very vocally supportive of each other. A weird line of questioning, and you'd have to wonder why specifically Andrew Scott. And there's a question as to whether did Patterson think it was appropriate because Andrew Scott is gay? Let's ask him about Willie's. You know what I mean? That's, you obviously can't see, but I'm rubbing my face in frustration. I really can't understand that thought process. And it was just very frustrating. It's an impossible clip to watch from Andrew's perspective, especially as someone, like, we were at the premiere for All of Us Strangers, and to see Andrew get visibly emotional talking about this, All of Us Strangers, this film, and about how we're seeing these stories play out on screen when, I mean, like, less than 30 years ago or whatever, it was illegal to hold someone's hand in the street if you were gay. You know what I mean? It's just all a bit pathetic. And I'd say something now, if there was a thing about prosthetics being used of All of Us Strangers, as far as I'm aware, there isn't. You know, there's no even tenuous link. And it seems like it was just asked for shock value. And I know some people were arguing Sophie Alice Baxter was asked about the scene. I can kind of understand the thought process there, because her song is specifically used to soundtrack that scene. She's intimately aware of it. I think personally there are more interesting questions to ask than asking about other people's bits and bobs, even for Sophie Alex Baxter. But I don't know, there's been a huge, people are calling on him to apologise, whatever. I'm not sure if he will. I mean, we'll see, watch this space. But I did see, it's kind of brought up this other conversation that I'm seeing play out now on social media as well. Someone had written online about this specific interview moment, saying social media has ruined us. The need to go viral from red carpet interviews is destroying them. And I wanted to put that to you, listeners. What do you think of that statement? Because I kind of agree. I see this, now I will say, I see this kind of criticism levelled at, I'm seeing it levelled more at the likes of Amelia de Moldenberg, who does Chicken Shop Date, recently announced as the red carpet correspondent for the Oscars. I'm pretty sure that's her title. She's going to be at the Oscars in some capacity anyway. Seeing a lot of things come up around that. And like, look, I think those type of interviews and those type of questions, absolutely time and a place, because these type of interviews and these type of questions came about because interviews were getting too self-serious. You know, the actors were kind of, they were getting bored of answering the same questions. these kind of cookie cutter copy and paste questions where they either weren't allowed to kind of think about things or have fun, right? So the Amelia de Moldenbergs, the chicken shop dates, the stuff like that, these viral fun moments were born out of a need for them. But I do also think there needs to be balance. Like, I'm happy for Amelia to be there and do her thing and get the clips and have fun with the celebrities because you're seeing them in new light. And often you are getting different insights into how they work or like behind the scenes, you know, tidbits or whatever. You do get that as well as kind of the fun, jokey stuff. And I think they're as worthy as the nitty gritty, we're getting into the art, we're talking about the art, guys. You know, those kind of questions. But there has to be a balance. Like, you can have 50% of the interview be, you know, we're talking about this, and then the last 50%, now we're having fun, or 75-25. Or if you want to weigh it another way, you know what I mean? Like, it can be 25% serious, 75% fun, you know? But fun doesn't mean fucking stupid. Like, and it goes back to this, I just can't. From my perspective, if I was prepping to interview Andrew Scott, the only question I'd be asking him about Barry would be, why do you think we're producing so many good talents at the minute? Which, again, is that a great question? In hindsight, no. We're learning on the job, girls. We're working this out as we go, right? But that's still a better question than, what do you think of Barry? What did you make of that scene? Gas, isn't it? What do you want that person to say in response? I don't know. Also, the Saltburn discourse is dead. We need to be talking about something else now, okay? This is how far we've moved past it. I don't know. What do you guys think? You're always very good at coming back with feedback on these stories, so we're very interested here. It's flopculture_pod on Instagram. I'm always reading your messages there. Or if you want to go longer, tell flopculture@gmail.com. Can read some in next week's episode. Sorry, was I on the rant there? It's been a while since you've had a rant. Anyway, thank you so much for listening, as always. Or if it's your first time, so happy to have you. Much appreciated. I already mentioned we're on social media and I mentioned Instagram. We're on TikTok as well. It's the same name. It's @flopculture_pod. I would love some ratings. 5-star or 4-star. You know what? You can't be greedy in this cost of living crisis. Wherever you're listening, if you leave a review on Apple Podcasts and your nickname, I'll recommend a bop or flop to you next week's episode. And I mentioned we're on Patreon. Patreon.com/flopculture. You get minimum 2 bonus episodes a month, but it's usually more. What have we done this month so far? We just released our episode of Bop Culture on Sharp Objects, a brilliant recap with Kay McCarthy. And also coming up, I did an episode on Book Talk. Is it in its flop era with Carla Kay? Lots of book talk drama around specific authors, genres, tropes, stuff that I knew nothing about. So I was really glad that Carla jumped in on that. That, if it's not out by the time this episode is out, it will be out very soon. You also get the episodes ad-free, early access. I just hit my laptop, sorry. You get other things. Sometimes you get video episodes. It's great. I love it over there. And you get an opportunity to like chat with me, leave comments. As always, if you want to request episode topics, it's helloflopculture@gmail.com. We're nearly coming to the end of season 3, so this is really your last chance unless you're waiting for the next season. So do get your suggestions in. If you just want the audio only, the bonus audio, you can also now subscribe on Apple Podcasts for slightly cheaper as well, and you get the episodes in feed. Some of the episodes are available to watch on YouTube, including this one. I think that's all my plugging. This has been Flop Culture. I really appreciate you listening. Edited as always by Adam Shanahan. I'll see you back here, same time, same place, next week. Bye bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.